This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning, entering into Saturday afternoon, of course. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, alongside my colleagues Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Producer Tim gets us on and off the air like the expert that he is. Joining us on the show today, coming up in about 1 hour's time, a Saturday Spotlight interview live in studio here at TSN 1290. Winnipeg Jets broadcaster, the voice of the Jets on TSN 3, occasionally on TSN 1290 as well. Dennis Bayak is going to join us for Saturday Spotlight. Talk about Dennis's fascinating career in the world of hockey. Looking forward to that interview. Also today on the show, Ray Ratto from CSNBayArea.com to talk about the San Jose Sharks. They are off to a struggling start this year. We'll talk to Ray about what's going to happen in the Bay Area. And then at 12:30 this afternoon, Ken Campbell from the Hockey News, he's going to join us to talk about hockey coaching legend, general manager Pat Quinn. Pat obviously passed away earlier this week, so we'll talk to Ken Campbell about Pat Quinn. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is illegalcurve.com. I say good morning to my colleagues, Richard and Ezra. Gentlemen, good to see you on this snowy Saturday morning here in Winnipeg.
Well, it's a great day to be on radio because, you know, everybody will be in their car for twice as much as often as they usually are, considering the snow. Ezzy actually walked here in snowshoes.
Yeah, I thought I'd take it back to the Canadian roots and put the snowshoes on. Yeah, well, Drew, it's good to be here. Happy Grey Cup weekend here.
Yes,
of course. We had a week off, which was a little bit weird. We're used to having that midweek show, but it was nice. I was telling Richie a couple days ago, we hadn't spoken in 2 or 3 days. It seemed like it was like 2 months. But it's nice to have a little week off, and the Jets are going to have 4 days off here too. So some of the injured players like Brian Little are going to get a chance to recover.
Yeah, absolutely. The Jets will probably need that 4 days off after what we saw happen to Brian Little last night in Boston. Let's start with that game in Boston. We're going to go goal by goal talking about the game. But before we do that, sort of your overarching thoughts about the game last night and the Jets road trip in general, where they got 5 out of 6 points. Really, the two games that they had to win, they did. Not altogether pretty, but that's okay. You don't get style points. And then last night, they got a point out of Boston, largely on the back of Michael Hutchinson with a 38-save performance. Your thoughts on the game last night and the week that was for the Jets?
Well, first of all, the only person that gets style points on the show is Richie, so we'll just continue on from there. But I thought it was a good game, guys. I thought it was an exciting game, and we saw the overtime goal. It was a tough, I thought, especially tough goal for Michael Hutchinson, who I thought was really the difference in that game, kept the Jets in it. They could have really lost it towards the end there. But I thought, the to me, watching that game, and you mentioned the earlier road games, Drew, Buffalo, Columbus. That Buffalo game might have been the worst hockey game I've ever seen in my life. Buffalo, I was trying to think, like, but it's clear that Buffalo is the worst team in the NHL. But to me, are they the worst team in the last 20 years? That's just what the question is. But we won't focus on that game because the Jets won that game. And I was watching that 5 minutes into that game. I couldn't wait for it to end just because the Buffalo couldn't put together two passes. But as far as this game goes, the speed difference between the Boston Bruins and Buffalo Sabres was night and day. Mm-hmm. And I thought the Jets really used their speed well. Mm-hmm. And you saw how many shots Evander Kane and Dustin Byfuglien had in that game with Mark Scheifele. I thought that line really did a nice job against the Boston Bruins second pairing there. And I thought that they really did skate with the Boston Bruins, and they did a really good job. I thought they controlled the neutral zone for most of the game, and I thought that they were in a position to win. I didn't think either team really had any advantage or any really momentum. Obviously, the Jets had the lead going into the third period there, but I thought that they did a really nice job there. And you're talking about Brian Little going down. They seemed to really adapt to that. The fourth line didn't get much playing time there late, but that's going to be the case, especially with Brian Little out. But I thought, at this road trip as a whole, I thought that they really played the system that they've gotten used to over the last 2 months here. And, the goaltending was excellent. And I think Michael Hutchinson, there was a lot of pressure on him going into Boston, his old team. He never played in the regular season for Boston, but I thought he was spectacular. And I don't think there were many people watching that game that weren't rooting for the Jets just because Michael Hutchinson really stood in his head. It would have been such a nice story, but they got the point. As you mentioned, Drew, 5 of possible 6 points. You come back here, you have 4 days to you know, mend those injuries with Toby Enstrom and Brian Little. So I don't have a lot of complaints about the way they played.
Yeah, 5 of 6 points, Drew. You expect to beat Columbus and Buffalo, two of the worst teams in the league, and you do that. And you take 1 of 2 in Boston. Team Boston's better than the Jets, I think, especially when they're fully healthy. But Jets were in that game, of course. And 5 of 6 on the road. The Jets are playing very well on the road. And they have to make sure they bring that back home. But you can't not like what they've been doing lately. When they go out on the road, they play. I think the simple style that they've started to play is even easier to affect on the road because there's less pressure to score or create chances. You can do, you know, you can play a simple game and nobody's going to boo or complain about the power play, which, by the way, has been getting better, and which has been important as well. So some format changes and things like that. But successful trip. And I think Hutchinson has to start on Wednesday against the Oilers. And I don't really care if it creates a goalie controversy or not. I think healthy competition is a good thing. And by the way he's playing right now, and Pavlik played well in Buffalo, but the way he's playing right now, I don't see why you wouldn't start him.
Sure. I'm sure we'll talk about that throughout the course of the show. But let's start with the Jets and the mm-hmm. Bruins. The Jets mm-hmm. opened the scoring. You mentioned the power play was successful. Mm-hmm. It came at the 16:24 mark. Dustin Byfuglien gets his fourth of the year.
Back in behind his own net for Trouba. And the Jets will set it up as Kane and Bergeron got tangled up over there. Was it Marchand? Either way, they separate. The Jets get it inside. Here's Trouba on the near side for Byfuglien. A shot stopped in front. Rebound up in the air. And trying to swat it out is a couple of Bruins. Bergeron couldn't get it out. Stopped in the line by Byfuglien. Up top, lets Arista go. He scores! Dustin Byfuglien with a wrist shot from the point. And the Jets open up the scoring. It's 1-0 on a power play goal.
Dustin Byfuglien, his fourth of the year, assist to Evander Kane and Mark Scheifele at the 16:24 mark of the first period. Louis Erickson was in the box for tripping. Jets get the 1-0 lead on the road. Just sort of simple goal, but effective.
That was their third power play of the period. I thought, and all three of those power plays, penalties, I should say, second, but there was three.
There was three penalties in the first period. That was their second one.
I thought that they were doing a really good job of causing drawing those penalties, I should say. But to me, Richie, for me, the reason why the power play, and you know, you could talk about, okay, Columbus and Buffalo, those are mm-hmm. weaker opponents, mm-hmm. so you get power play goals against teams that aren't very good. Boston doesn't have a very good penalty kill. I think they're around 20th or 22nd, something like that. But to me, they've changed the look of the power play in the sense that they not only do they not have Tobias Enstrom out there, and so they're using Paul Postma and Trouba better. The shot was a good shot. You could tell Byfuglien, he didn't go with the slapper. He put the shot on net. He could see that Michael Frolik and mm-hmm. I believe it was
Kane
in front of the net. Yeah. Kane retrieved that puck. To me, that was all about retrieving the puck and getting it to Byfuglien. And to me, I think the Jets have been more active on the power play as opposed to kind of doing the typical, you know, try to use the shot coming in from the sideboards and all of that. They've really gotten traffic in front of the net. And that Blake Wheeler, same thing when he's out there. So I thought it was a really simple, nice goal. And it was nice to know that their power play was going to help them out. To me, you don't score a power play goal there in the first period. That can really zap energy. And they got the goal there, and it was a simple goal, as I said. You know, Buff gets the shot. There's traffic in front of the net. That's the way you draw it up in practice.
The play, really, to me, starts when you dump the puck in on the power play, and you dump it up, dump it in well enough and really hard enough that Tuukka Rask can't stop it behind his own net. And that's what happens. The Jets dump it in from the left side. It shoots around the boards. It's going too fast, so Rask can't stop it. Mark Scheifele and Frolik converge on the puck and the boards. And it's actually Scheifele who's coming hard on the right boards. He's coming in on Marchand. So Brad Marchand and Patrice Bergeron, really good penalty-killing duo we've heard about for many years. Scheifele comes in and basically takes out Marchand. So when he takes on Marchand, what happens is the puck trickles over to Trouba. Trouba makes a really nice fake shot, kind of, you know, fakes putting the puck on net, gets it over to Byfuglien. And if you watch, I mean, Byfuglien has a lot of room here. Tuukka Rask makes a really nice save on the one-timer. And that's Byfuglien on his off wing. Nice pass. So the puck comes up. Rask makes a really nice save, but Rask is aggressive, slides too far over in his net. The puck pops around. And this is what I like about Scheifele here on this play. Scheifele gets it on the forecheck, doesn't need to touch the puck, but gets in the way of Marchand. Puck trickles through. Then Scheifele comes from the right side. The rebound comes out, and Scheifele finds the puck. Battles with Bergeron, finds the puck, and then Kane gets it, as he mentioned, to Byfuglien. Byfuglien's able to move across the blue line, and he has Bergeron, who's been kind of chasing a bit here, is, again, not in the lane, because when you're chasing, you're not right where you're supposed to be. And Byfuglien realizes that, is able to get the puck on net, and you have Frolik and Kane in front, and they have to, Rask has to worry about a tip, and the puck gets through. And again, to Ezzie's point about, it's a simple shot. It's not that crazy howitzer. Get the puck on net. The Jets have been scoring a lot of goals like that.
And they, and Richie, we knew that the Jets were going to get some power play goals.
Yeah, of course.
Entering the road trip, they had six power play goals. So now they've got 10, I believe. So they've got 10 power play goals in 24 games, however many games the Jets have played here. And it's still bad. But you look at the last three games, they've got power play goals, four power play goals. That's huge for this team. And they've been stressing that, and Paul Maurice has talked about this in his pregame press conferences, that they want to keep it simple. Well, I think that's what they've done. And that you want to use your strengths and...
Well, I mean, you sound like Paul Maurice with all those cliches. But the thing is, it's true in that they need to be good on the power play because they can't score. If they're going to win every game 2-1, 3-2, you need to be able to score some goals in the power play. And that's what they're doing, right? I mean, the margin of error is so slim. 1-0 going into the third. You're going to lose some of those games because you're coin flipping. And if you're coin flipping, it certainly helps when you have the odds of the power play on your side.
Well, like you said, Richard, it was a 1-0 at the end of 40 minutes in this game last night against Boston. But that's not to say the Jets didn't have their opportunities to build on their lead.
Bergeron stick and skated out of his own zone, get the center, cross the line, lets a shot go, stopped by Rask. He gloves that down, then outlets it here on the near side for Torrey Krug. Krug will stick handle with the puck and then lose it at center. A chip and chase, Kane will pick it up. He's on a partial break, shorthanded, moving right in, let a backhander go, and it's stopped by Rask. What a great move by Kane at center ice to steal the puck and turn it into a breakaway, and an equally adept save made at the other end by Rask on number 9.
Jets certainly had their opportunities to build on that 1-0 lead. That was Evander Kane going in on a shorthanded breakaway. Mm-hmm. There was a couple opportunities. He had a sort of the other breakaway where he led the puck too far to himself and didn't end up really getting a good scoring opportunity. Byfuglien had a breakaway as well. I don't think he got everything he wanted on that shot. Jets really did. I mean, not that Boston didn't have their opportunities as well, but you know, the 1-0 lead after 40 minutes could have been more.
Kane and Byfuglien's anticipation and the way they use their speed in the right places was really incredible yesterday. I thought that was the best line by far. Obviously, we know Brian Little was injured, so that line, they had to switch the lines up a little bit there. But that chance, they go up 2-0. You know, it's really hard for the Boston Bruins to come back because that chance was really late in the second period. Would have been incredible. Kane was really good, and I thought he was using his teammates a lot better. And, you know, we've been hard on him this year for not passing enough and taking shots from bad angles. But I thought he was really good. And you can see how dangerous Evander Kane can be both on the power play and on shorthanded. And because we've talked about this, Kane has got his shorthanded time. But the Jets don't have any shortage of players that they can put on the penalty kill. So you can put Andrew Ladd, you can put Brian Little out there, and then we've seen Jim Slater, and then when TJ Gagliardi's in the lineup, Jets have a top 10 penalty kill. And then you can throw out Evander Kane when he's fresh. And, you know, as I said, that they go up 2-0 there, and, you know, that game is pretty much over, in my opinion, the way Hutchinson was playing. So it was a great save by Rask, but a really good anticipation from Kane.
Kane was really good last night, I thought, because he was using his speed and he was skating. I mean, he's not going to be the most effective power play player. He can't see the ice that particularly well. But he uses speed in open ice, and he created a lot of chances for himself, created partial breakaways, created odd man rushes. He's predictable in what he does when he gets on those, but you still need to have the skill to get on those, and not a lot of people do. And he can go from 0 to 60 as fast, as quickly as anyone, and obviously he's got that great wrist shot.
After 40 minutes, the Jets still led 1-0. The question entering the third period, were those missed opportunities going to come back and bite the Jets in the behind? And it did happen at the 3:05 mark, Milan Lucic, with his fifth of the year.
In his own zone is Paille to pick up the puck. He skates it out to center, backhands it off the boards, and the Bruins make a wholesale. Jets will try to take advantage and put it up quickly for Byfuglien. He redirected it down inside the Bruins' end. Bruins put it on the far side for Lucic to center. Across the line, he'll drop it there, get a return pass, they score!
What did you see happen on this goal? Lucic, his fifth of the year, assist to Carl Soderberg and Dougie Hamilton at the 3:05 mark of the third period.
That's a pretty simple play, Drew. You have Klitsam and Bogosian backed up as a D, and you have basically numbers. You're 3-on-3 there. And Lucic makes the initial pass and has to wait until has to kind of slow up to make sure he's onside. Scheifele is essentially parallel with him, and if you're watching the game or you watch the replay, Scheifele basically from the blue line in doesn't take one stride. That's what happened. And so he doesn't take a stride, and he starts to get into battle physically with Milan Lucic, and you will never win that. You will never get position on Lucic unless you skate in position. It's, you know, it's kind of like basketball. You have to get to the position. Yeah, you know, have to front the guy. You have to get to position before he does, and he doesn't do that. And so when you don't move your feet from the blue line in on a guy who's 6'5", 240 pounds, you're going to lose position, which he did. Lucic made a nice play going to the net. That's what they tell you. You know, your coaches will always tell you, get to the net, net drive on a 3-on-2 or 3-on-3. He draws the middle, and Shifley just lost his guy. So as good of a play he did in the first goal, this is a mishap for him as a young player on the second goal.
And he's going to learn. You can see the potential in Shifley, especially on that in his positioning on the defensive side of the game. But you're right, Richie. Lucic is so strong, and this is just a nice goal. And, yeah, Shifley doesn't get position on him, and it's unfortunate because I thought that, as I mentioned, I thought Shifley, Kane, and Bufflin was the best forward line. But it's just a beautiful play. Carl Soderberg, I mean, they found this guy. I imagine it was the European scouts that originally found Carl Soderberg. He didn't come into the NHL till he was almost 28, I believe, but you know, he picked up 2 assists. He's a great player.
It's a St. Louis draft pick, is he?
Oh, it was a St. Louis draft pick. And, you know, so it could have been Jarmo Kekäläinen.
Could have been, yeah.
So it's a goal where, yeah, it was tough to give up that goal because I thought Grant Clutsam and Zach Bogosian played really well. And, you know, Jacob Trouba, I know, led all players in ice time, and he was really good. But I thought Clutsam, you know, stepping up and playing with Bogosian the last 3 games, he hasn't looked bad. I got to give him credit here. And that goal wasn't really his fault. It wasn't the goalie's fault. It was a nicely executed play from Soderberg to Lucic.
Paul Maurice made a good point. I thought when he put Clutsam in the lineup after Enstrom's injury, and that he's going to be able, he may play better because he's playing more right away as opposed to playing the 8 to 10, 12 minutes a game. He's coming in there playing with Bogosian, logging more significant time. If you get 3 of 4 points on the road with Pardee, Clutsam, and Stewart as your left side, as a big picture, you have to be laughing because, I mean, you can't sustain that. Just that left side of defense cannot be sustained for over a period of more than, I think, 3 to 4 or 5 games.
Toby Enstrom needs to come back for the hopefully by Wednesday when the Jets play the Oilers. The Bruins did win in overtime, not until Michael Hutchinson just made a number of key saves.
Well, the Bergeron one I thought was the biggest one off the rebound and kind of the open side of his pad there. That was a huge save. And the Bruins were really coming on at that point in the game. And if they scored, I think it would have been over. So Hutchinson was terrific.
Yeah, the Jets did have an opportunity at the end of the third period. They finished the regulation time on the power play. Brad Marchand took a 4-minute double minor for high sticking Grant Clutsam. The Jets needed that one more power play goal. They weren't able to get it. Game goes into overtime.
It hurts you too because you had a power play in overtime.
That's right. You had
for
the 30 power
seconds. You have the center ice draw, so there's some time there. But
you had a 4-on-3 power play briefly in overtime. Dougie Hamilton gets his 5th of the year. This is how it sounded.
There by Soderberg. He played it around the boards in his own zone for Eriksson, who tried to get it out and does as he skates it out and puts it in toward the middle. Back for Soderberg across the line. He will put it late for Dougie Hamilton coming in, shooting, and they score!
First thing we have to say, Dougie Hamilton's really...
he's a nice player.
Yeah, he's really improved from last year. And the development, I think that from the Bruins' perspective, and I know listeners here more care about obviously about the Jets' perspective. From the Bruins' perspective, a lot of these young guys are going to get a lot of opportunities now. And when their guys come back who are healthy, McQuaid and Chara and Krejci, the young guys will be better off for it down the road when the Bruins are playing in the playoffs and the young guys have had the experience. On this goal, Perreault falls down in the offensive zone. Frolik's on. You got your 2D on. Perreault falls down. What does he do? He goes on a change.
Yeah, it looks a little hobbled when he leaves the ice.
So he goes for a change. What he does is Shifley comes on. And Hamilton is the fourth guy Bruin up the ice. Okay, so it's a 3-on-3, and he's the fourth guy.
Yeah.
He's a trailer. In 4-on-4 hockey, the trailer is especially important. In NHL these days, it's actually important because everybody's always throwing the extra defenseman now. But in 4-on-4, it's especially important. Shifley is chasing Hamilton. Not his fault, because Perreault hops off the ice. You don't want to be hopping off for a change when the puck's going the other way. That's what happens here. And Perreault was down on the ice for a second there. Perreault hops off the ice. Shifley hops on. Shifley is chasing Hamilton. Hamilton's open. Shifley doesn't get there in time. Understandably so. Certainly not his fault. And Hamilton takes a nice shot, and that's the game.
Absolutely. Jets end up falling to the Bruins by that 2-1 margin last night. But like we said at the start of the segment, 5 out of 6 points. Yeah. You come back next week. You have the Oilers on Wednesday. The Oilers, who have still not won a game against the Western Conference.
They're terrible.
Yeah. Who are absolutely atrocious. Yeah. The Colorado Avalanche, who everyone said that they were, you know, were surprised that their struggles have continued, but they have. These are another 2 very winnable games for the Jets where they could possibly get 9 out of 10 points in their last 5 games.
It's possible. Yeah, absolutely. And they have a nice rest coming up here where they have 4 days off, and I imagine they'll probably get a day off.
They're off today.
They are off today. There you go. That's where you're here to make me look good, Drew. So, yeah, absolutely. Edmonton is a winnable game, as you mentioned. They haven't beaten a Western Conference team, so you have to think that that's a win that you can put in. It is it is crazy, Richie. And Colorado, even though they've got tons of skill, they haven't really got their game going. So the schedule looks nice right now. And then after that, though, not so much, as you've got the Anaheim Ducks coming up twice
in a week.
Yeah.
That's a good test. I think that is what the Jets are positioned now, where they're playing well against these teams that aren't as good as them. They're giving you certainly challenging teams like St. Louis, but that's good. You want to play the good teams. You want to see where you stand, and if you can sustain this play against the real players in this league.
Let's head to break. When we come back, it's U.S. Thanksgiving, or it was on Thursday. We'll look at the playoff race, because that's the new benchmark, apparently. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290 online, TSN1290.ca. This segment is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey. Conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Gentlemen, U.S. Thanksgiving has become the new benchmark to determine if you're going to be a playoff team or if you're not going to be a playoff team.
Why even play after November 26th?
They should just cancel all the games.
Cancel the year.
Just simulate them online if you have to, if you have to get to all 82 games. The Jets, prior to Thursday, were not in the playoffs, but then after winning those two games against those two pretty terrible teams in Buffalo and Columbus, the Jets are now considered we're in a playoff spot at that point in time. Of course, there is a caveat on that, in that they've played more games than pretty much any team in their division. In fact, they have played more games than anybody in their division.
At least two more games.
They've played more games than anybody in the Western Conference.
That's true as well.
So if you were to look at it as a points per game basis.
True, they've played more games than every other team in the entire league.
Well, so you wanted to say that would make sense why they're off for the next 5 days. Mm-hmm. But if you look at it on a points per game basis, they would not be a playoff team, as Minnesota would successfully leapfrog them. Mm-hmm. But on U.S. Thanksgiving, they were in the playoffs. Do you put any weight into this arbitrary date at this point in time?
No. People like to write articles about things, and it's something that they can write about at the end of November. I mean, does it help to have a lot of points at Thanksgiving to give yourself a chance? Yeah, of course, because the more points you have, the better chance you have of making the playoffs. This is like rocket science here. I mean, I can't take this stuff seriously. Oh, the odds are, if it happens, what are the odds as of December 1st? What are they as of November 23rd?
I'm going to go out on a limb and say the longer you're in a playoff spot for, the better your odds are.
Well, it's interesting.
Hey? Yeah.
Yeah, so, but if we look at this and take this seriously, which I don't think any of us want to, all this is a benchmark, Drew, as you mentioned. So if you look at last year, and as you remember, the season started a week earlier last year because of the Sochi Olympics. So if you look at it last year, teams had played a few more games. Some teams had played 26, 27 games. But if you look at the playoff spots and which teams were in playoff positions and eventually made the playoffs, there were only 3 out of the 16 teams at that time who fell out.
Yes.
So good teams had more points than bad teams, is that what you're saying?
Yes. And I know I just blew your mind, Richie, but that is the case. But you look at the West, and the only team that dropped out that was in a playoff position around American Thanksgiving was Phoenix.
Last year you're talking about.
Last year I'm talking about. Phoenix and
Dallas.
The artist
known as Phoenix.
Dallas was 8 points behind Phoenix. 8 points. So they made up 8 points, okay, first of all. In the Eastern Conference, you had the Philadelphia Flyers and the Columbus Blue Jackets. Flyers were 4 points out of it, and Blue Jackets were 5 points out of it. So you have to take this with a grain of salt. Last year, and I haven't gone back historically to 2013, 12, 2011, and all that. I know they did a piece in the Toronto Star. Dave Manuk of Illegal Curve actually did a little piece about American Thanksgiving and the Jets, and what does that mean? You can check that out. Maybe we can link that now.
Was it about the standings, or was it about turkey? Like,
it was about turkey, stuffing, yams, that. But no, I mean, just going back to last year, so that means the Jets are in a playoff spot right now, which is great. But the other teams have games in hand, and there's 57 games left to play or whatever it is. So, I mean, you got to... you got to be realistic here that, yes, this is very good, and that means that the Jets have a better chance than if they were 6 points behind. But we've got lots of hockey here to play, so let's not get too carried away here.
Let me ask you guys this. You look at the standings today, and we'll just look at the Western Conference. Right now, Minnesota, Dallas, Colorado, they're out of a playoff spot. San Jose, Arizona, Edmonton, they're out of a playoff spot. Of those six teams, who would you realistically expect is going to get back in and be one of the final eight come playoff time?
Well, right off the bat, I think the Colorado Avalanche, for me, I think the goaltending has been a mess. The defense has been a mess. Nathan MacKinnon has really struggled. You're 6 points out of a playoff spot. So we just mentioned last year Dallas was 8 points out of a playoff spot at this time, actually having played more games. So you look at that and you're saying, well, Colorado and 13. Well, Edmonton's not making the playoffs this year. I think we can all agree on that. They'd have to go on a crazy run here.
Yeah, they're done.
They've won 6 out of 23
it's
games.
Over.
6 out of 23.
24.
Or 24. What standings am I looking at?
I don't know.
Oh.
Maybe you're looking at an old file from that hasn't been updated since they lost last
night. I
got to
get a new
again.
Computer here. But so that's doable, I think, for the Colorado Avalanche. I don't think the Coyotes are getting in. But you look at some of these other teams here, and San Jose has 2 home wins. They've only played 8 games at home, mind you. They have a lot of home games coming up, so we got to mention that. But I don't know about the San Jose Sharks. To me, the Minnesota Wild, I think there's no way that they don't make the playoffs. I mean, they have really struggled on the defensive side of the game, and they have just so many star players there that haven't really got going. So I would have to say at least 2 of those teams, Colorado and Minnesota, and then to me, Dallas or San Jose, it's going to be tough for one of those teams not to make it. So then you're talking about which teams fall out, Richie. So that has to be, for me, maybe one of Vancouver, Nashville, Calgary, or maybe 2 of those teams.
Vancouver's the best team in the NHL right now.
Mm-hmm.
They have the most points in the NHL right now. They're 16-6-1.
With the shutout of Columbus last night.
That's right. I mean, I know that Vancouver's exceeding expectations, but for them to fall out of a playoff spot at this point in time, I think would be pretty surprising.
They got players, too. I mean, it's not, you know.
Yeah, it's not like they're devoid of talent. You look at Calgary, and you'd say that they're, you know, it's a great story. But, you know, you think that push comes to shove when, you know, as they get into game 40 and 50 and 60 on the year, their lack of talent is going to...
You would have thought they'd be already fading now, though.
Yeah, you would have thought that they were already fading now. That's
true.
And
they got players on D and in goal.
I mean, they're 10-2-1 at home. I mean, they've just been absolutely unbeatable in the Saddle Dome this year.
I mean, do you expect it to continue? Likely not, but it's been a great story. You know, you asked your question, Drew. Minnesota, I agree with you. Minnesota, you could argue, is the best team in the Central. I would put them up against any team and say, you know, I'll take my chances. I personally think St. Louis is actually the best team in that division right now. But Minnesota is going to be a playoff team for my money. So I think the next question is anybody, you know, that throws Winnipeg back into the mix likely? And then you have San Jose, Arizona, Edmonton, I think are done. Colorado, I think it's going to be a tough battle for them. Then you got Dallas. I mean, they have the talent to make that run, but I think they also have the future aspirations here. So, I don't know how much movement you're going to see. San Jose, we're going to talk to Ray Ratto later about it, you know, in San Jose about that, because the talent is there. It's been an absolute mess, and Doug Wilson, he's going to have to make a move here. I mean, you have to make a move. I'm not saying you have to make a move to turn the season around. If you think you're going to have any chance in the playoffs, you have to change the fabric of your roster, and you've never done it. So that one is, the talent is there, the home games are there. That'll be interesting.
Yeah, it seems to me like San Jose is the sort of the team that, you know, if we agree that Calgary is probably going to drop out, does it become one of Minnesota taking that Calgary spot along with the Jets, or does San Jose get back in the race as well? You know, the question that I think that's going to be worth answering and worth monitoring for the rest of the NHL season.
8 games at home, though, and 16 games on the road.
Jets have only played 10 games at home.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Jets have played 10 games at home and 15 on the road. So I don't think there's a huge difference there.
If they're competing with each other, then yeah.
Yeah.
Drew, it's way too early. You look at Minnesota, they've got 2 games in hand on the Calgary Flames, and they're in 9th, and the Calgary Flames are in 5th. So a couple of wins, and, you know, and then they basically switch positions, right? So it's too early to start, you know, anointing playoff positions.
Let's go to break. When we come back, we'll talk about Evander Kane, and if he was to be traded, if is the key word, what would his trade value be thus far this year? You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, online tsn1290.ca. Before we move on with the show, got to give props to my main man on my left here, the mustachioed Ezra Ginsberg. Movember is obviously coming to an end this weekend. I believe December 1st is what, Monday?
Yes.
Okay, so it comes to an end on Monday. Ezzy, I assume you're shaving that thing off your face on Monday?
Yeah, I'll probably wait till Monday to shave it off. That's good. And then December it starts.
December it starts. Yep. That's very nice. But you have done a great job raising money, you alongside Lisa. She's our Mo sister on Team Illegal Curve. You two have raised a ton of money for Movember. Great cause, and I salute you.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate that, Drew. Yeah, Lisa Webinger is the other member of Team Illegal Curve, and I got to give my hats off to her. She's done a great job raising money, too. I think we're around almost $1,300.
Very nice.
So the two of us, and I think, you know, we still have a couple days left, so yep. We're still, you know, if people would like to donate to Movember, obviously goes towards men's health initiatives. Movember's awesome, and we've got to know Jeff Paulson and Movember Winnipeg, all of those people. John Walden's also involved with Movember Winnipeg. They had their Mo Gala yesterday. It's coming to an end, but it's been fun. You know, you grow the mustache, and you raise money for a good cause, so it's been lots of fun, and as I said, it's nice. It's at towards this end point of the year, all these creepy mustaches come off, so it's nice. But you know, it's kind of sad because it's a fun month.
I will tweet out the link if you want to donate to Team Illegal Curve for Movember momentarily on our Twitter feed at Illegal Curve. Gentlemen, Evander Kane, as has sort of happened each and every year, there's always trade rumors surrounding Mr. Kane for whatever reason. We're not going to give credence to the latest rumor because the person who came up with it, frankly, doesn't have the credibility. But what I want to ask you is, when you look at Evander Kane and you look at his trade value, has his trade value diminished so far this season over the past year and a bit? 9 points so far this year, 17 games, 4 goals, 5 assists. To your mind, has Evander Kane's trade value diminished since he signed that big contract with the Winnipeg Jets?
It's a good question. If you asked me that a few weeks ago, maybe it seems to change a lot with Evander Kane. He had the 2 goals the other night, and yesterday he was really good picking up the assist on Dustin Byfuglien's goal. So maybe a couple weeks ago my opinion might have changed a little bit. But it's tough, Richie, because he had that injury in the first game against Arizona. So it's tough because he missed those nine games at the beginning of the season. I think it was 8 games. So he hasn't had a full season so far. But I don't know if it's changed that much. Evander Kane is a very skilled player that I think has significant shortcomings. And we've documented them over the last 3 years on the show. And it's not a personal thing against Evander Kane. I think, you know, when you watched him, you know, 200 plus times over the years for the Winnipeg Jets, you see that he's not Wayne Gretzky. He's a good player. And we've heard about the 40-goal, 80-point potential, or maybe even has 90-point potential. To me, guys, there has to be a Jim Nill out there that thinks that Evander Kane is Tyler Seguin. And what I mean by that is they have to trade a significant player. And Jim Nill traded Louis Erickson and Riley Smith. And it turns out that Jim Nill won that trade. So for me, for Evander Kane to be traded, Richie, a team has to be willing to give up a significant forward off of their roster, not a first-round pick and a decent prospect. I don't think Kevin Cheveldayoff is going to get excited about a first-round pick and a prospect. He wants a player coming back that he knows that can go into the lineup and get 60 or 70 points. Because it's not, even though Evander Kane has those shortcomings, he's not easy to replace. As we mentioned, he plays on the power play, plays on the penalty kill. He has a 30-goal season, even though that was a long time ago now. He's a very good player. So I think, you know, his trade value is still high, but if we're talking about how high is it, I don't think it's Tyler Seguin high.
Yeah, I don't think it's changed too much, Drew. I think it's probably the same. I mean, the only, I don't think, the guys who make trades in the National Hockey League know what Evander Kane's skill set is, and his skill set really isn't changing. And they know that. I think the only way his value changes is the closer you get to the end of the contract. So now you have basically 3 years and three quarters of a season left on the deal. He's making $5.25 per year. At the end of that, he's a UFA. So anybody can sign him. So I think the longer you wait, if you're thinking of trading Evander Kane, which we think they might be interested in if the right offer comes around, then the longer you wait, the less, to me, you're going to get. Right? And I don't think that's going to change much in season. I think that changes season to season. So if you wait until after the season, then you have 3 years left on the deal. I don't think that's a huge issue. But if you were to wait the next year with 2 years left and it's a UFA at the end, then you're talking about different kind of value because then there's the risk of leaving.
Let me ask you this, though. I mean, we talk, you know, as you mentioned, Evander Kane's 30-goal year. That was 2011-2012. That was 3 years ago now. Last year, granted, there were injuries, but 17 goals. 19 goals. The year before that, 17 goals.
Yeah, but that was in 48 games.
And no, in 48 games. But, I mean, if he goes through this season and he's a 20-goal scorer, he's a 25-goal scorer,
yeah,
which is really more what he's on pace for right now, it'd be about between 20 and 25 goals.
Sure.
Does that affect what you can expect in return? Because people were earmarking him. You know, he said it himself at the beginning of the season that he thinks he can be a 40-goal guy, he thinks he can be a 50-goal guy. I mean, we watch his game, and I mean, he's certainly got attributes that are dynamite. He's got a great, his speed is tremendous. He gives a great effort night in, night out. Nobody's going to criticize him for that.
30 goals puts him in the top 15 in the league, 16 in the league last year. That's the thing. I mean, nobody scores anymore. You watch his game, 30 games, 2-1-3-2. So I think some people look at the 30 goal marker and say, oh, it's 30. And it is 30, but in this day and age, 30 is probably the 35 or 40 was before.
There aren't 100 guys getting 30 goals anymore.
Does Evander Kane, though, I mean, his shortcomings, would you say that he makes his line mates better?
No, he doesn't, but not really. I mean, he does by drawing attention, but not necessarily the passing angle of that. But he's not Tyler Seguin, Drew. He's not Tyler Seguin. 30 GMs out of 30 are taking Tyler Seguin over Kane. But you're going to trade him for a guy that likely has some kind of shortcoming as well. You know? He's not going to be a dominant guy that you simply build your team around. He's a winger, first of all, and that's always harder because he's not a center. And just the style of play that he brings is going to make him difficult to play with. So you're going to get a really good player back if you make that move, or a package of three good young players. But you're not going to make the trade straight up for a guy like Tyler. So, you know, you're not, and I don't think Kevin Cheveldayoff, first of all, has shown that he would make any trades, really. But that particular trade for a one-off, you know, one-up, I'm going to trade Kane for blank. That's risky for a guy who's been risk-averse thus far.
And, Richie, I think Tyler Seguin is a good comparable, even though Tyler Seguin, I think we'd agree, he was a second overall pick, and he's better, but comparable in the sense that you can analogize this because Dallas was trading for his potential. Because in Boston, Tyler Seguin did not put up the points. So Jim Neal looks like a genius because Tyler Seguin last year had by far his best year in the NHL. So I think that's what you're looking for. You're looking at a team, and I think as well, a team that wants to get Evander Kane also sees his power forward potential. The fact that the guy hits a lot. Mm-hmm. He can drop the gloves. That's an aspect of his game that I think is important.
He
plays a hard game. So I think you're looking at a situation where the team has to really see maybe something that another team doesn't see. Because I don't think Evander Kane is the player necessarily that 29 other teams want.
That's right.
But I think it's safe to say that there's maybe 15 teams that would strongly consider Evander Kane. And you look at some of these Eastern Conference teams, and we know the Western Conference game is a lot heavier of a game. There's probably a lot of teams that would like to have an Evander Kane in their lineup, especially come playoff time.
Would you say he's more of an Eastern Conference versus Western Conference player, or is he just, you know?
I don't really like the distinctions Eastern Conference, Western Conference. There's just a lot of bad teams in the East. I don't think they build. Maybe you build to beat the team in your division, like LA, and it's a bigger team. But I don't know. He's a player in the National Hockey League. These teams all play each other a bunch. I mean, he's suited for both conferences. I don't think there's a difference.
You probably, if you asked 30 general managers and you asked them how they build their team, you'd say they build it with size, speed,
exactly,
and strength.
Right, exactly.
It's tough to generalize 14 teams versus 16 teams, right? I mean, I think what's happened, especially with the Western Conference, how dominant they've been, you know, we're talking Chicago and LA, right?
So basketball, too. They have ebbs and flows of dominance in different conferences. The drafts, the dominating players, you know, and Taves and Kane and Getzlaff, and these guys are all on the West.
You could pick out, for example, just at the off the top of my head, you could say Philly and Boston kind of play more of a Western Conference style of game, more of a physical, grinding type of game.
Those are two teams that are tied to him, right? And those are two teams who have apparently expressed interest in him.
And we don't know. I mean, we've heard that trades have been possible and all of this, but
well, it's not going to be for that offer. That was the rumor that I'm sure is made up. And I'll mention the players. I don't really care. There's Torrey Krug and Louis Eriksson. The Jets are not trading Evander Kane for those two players. Like they're not doing that trade. I mean, why would they do that?
Just not enough. Like Louis Eriksson was traded for Tyler Seguin.
Yeah, and Riley Smith.
Yeah, and Riley
and
Smith.
Joe Morrow and other players, Drew. Yeah, you're talking about Louis Erickson as a veteran winger, right winger, who shoots left, good defensively, good shot, good skater. Not the best playmaker in the world. Good player. Really good player. Top six guy for sure, in my opinion, although he struggled in Boston. Torrey Krug is a left-handed shooting, small defenseman. And I'm pretty sure Tobias Enstrom and Josh Morrissey in the system. He does play the right side right now, even though he's a left-handed shooting defenseman. The Jets are not trading for another small left-handed shooting defenseman on the roster. That trade doesn't make any sense. That's
also
not going to happen. I don't know who made that rumor up.
Doesn't make any sense.
Well,
sorry,
you know
Richie,
who made the rumor up. The rumor was made up by the Eklund online, who doesn't know anything and has a career based on making up rumors.
But those, like, the rumors we're just mentioning, these are the things. And even you hear about Philly rumors and, you know, the Shen brothers, whatever it may be. These aren't packages the Jets are making a trade for Evander Kane for. I mean, you better be talking about different guys if you're going to be talking about that trade. Okay? That's why when you hear the rumors, I'm sure these teams are always talking to each other. But you're going to need an actual package of players that fit what the Jets want. It's not just random players I'm going to plop on the roster. Yeah, let's get another small left-handed shooting defenseman on the team. That's what they want.
I think it all comes down to, I just don't think Evander Kane's getting traded this year. I don't know if he gets traded any year.
I agree with you, by the way.
I just don't. I mean,
right
last
now,
year,
I thought earlier he might. And right now, as it goes, the way the team is playing and the going to be in the race, it appears, I don't see them making
it. It was
move.
A different situation last year, Rich, with the coaching change and the team being completely out of the playoff picture well before the playoffs started. Now, as you mentioned, the Jets are playing well. He's not getting traded.
Yeah, and for all of the criticism, like I said, that he gets, night in, night out, he is noticeable when he plays. Sometimes it's for taking ridiculous shots, but he's always engaged and he's always physical. So Jets fans, you know, can criticize him, certainly have, but it shouldn't be for the effort that he demonstrates on the ice because he's in the games.
This road trip, and specifically last night against Boston, I thought he was excellent. This might be the best hockey he's played this year.
The one thing I will say to that is, are you looking big picture or small picture? And by that I mean, Evander Kane certainly helps your team this year. Certainly helps your team every time he's on the ice because he's better than a lot of other players. But if you're looking at it big picture and you see that he's got 3 years left on his deal after this year, this is looking really big picture, and he's essentially said he doesn't want to really play in Winnipeg. At what point, and that's kind of, you know, leaning towards that Oakland A's Toronto Blue Jays trade yesterday, at what point do you cut bait early to get a big return as opposed to waiting too long? That's all I'd say in that respect. But the pressure comes on when you're in the race, then it changes the dynamics of it.
By the way, I know you're a Blue Jays guy. Did you like that trade?
I did like the trade, yes I do.
I agree. I thought it was, I mean, you got the fourth in MVP voting, Josh Donaldson last year, and Brett Laurie is great, except he's injured every second game.
We talk about the remiss, but he didn't show up.
Yeah. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, we'll look at the Forbes valuations of the NHL teams.
You're listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Coming up at the top of the hour, Saturday Spotlight with the voice of the Winnipeg Jets, Dennis Bayak. This segment of the show is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, an essential part of your protective equipment is a proper fitting, custom-made mouth guard. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center at 204-487-2226 or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. Gentlemen, the Forbes magazine, Forbes.com, has come out with their annual NHL valuations. They have the Jets ranking in at $358 million. That's what their worth is, which is up 5% from last year, 20th in the NHL. Last year, they said the revenue of the Winnipeg Jets was $102 million, 21st in the NHL, $3.3 million in income last year, 19th in the NHL. Do you think that these numbers are A, accurate? And B, do you think that the Jets, that there are 19 teams in the NHL that are worth more than the Winnipeg Jets?
Probably. I've read a bit about this and listened to some interviews with guys who are associated with it, and it's supposed to be pretty accurate, Drew, for the most part. Obviously, there are some estimates here that go into this, and certainly they don't capture, I think, the other revenue generated by the companies that own these teams.
Sure, the ancillary income, if you
exactly.
would.
So. I think that's, you know, that's something to take into account. But the biggest thing is, if you hear an owner's losing $1 million, $2 million, even $5 million, and the value of his franchise goes up by $10 to $15 to $20 million, or in the Jets' case, but $200 million more than what they bought it for, mm-hmm. You know, it's not something where you have to feel too bad for the owners here. There's a reason that they're involved in this. There's a reason that they've made a lot of money in the past, and there's a reason that they're going to make money in the future. So I think that's what the numbers say to me most of all. And then, obviously, the Toronto Maple Leafs value, and you could say Steve Ballmer
are number one at $1.3 billion.
You can say Steve Ballmer purchasing the Clippers for $2 billion, and they don't even own the arena, it would mean that the Leafs are probably low on there. And I think they'd probably go for more on the open market. But I also think that Ballmer is a bit of a one-off. So it's interesting to see the numbers, and I'm not surprised that the top three teams are the Rangers, the Leafs, and the Habs.
Is it interesting to see these numbers? I feel like these numbers come out once or twice a year, and you know, I'm not surprised when Richie tells me he was at a Leafs game at Air Canada Center and beers were $16. I'm not surprised that the Leafs are worth $1.3 billion. When you're worth that much money, I guess you can charge that much for beer. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you mentioned, Drew, that the Jets are in 20th or 19th, whatever it was.
20th in current value.
Current value, and based on the amount that True North paid for the Winnipeg Jets, looks like a pretty darn good return on investment right now. And the thing is, we know that. The MTS Center, it's sold out every game. They have 13,000 season ticket holders. They have done a great job, and there's no complaints. Now, would you rather be a little bit higher? Great. I don't think True North. I can't speak for True North. I don't think that they care.
I think they're thankful for that.
Exactly. Exactly. I don't think that True North really cares. I don't think, maybe you guys disagree, but I don't think they really care whether they're ranked 20th or 15th on this Forbes list. I think it's just interesting to maybe see, and it's nice to know that the Winnipeg Jets are I would look at it with the glass half full approach and say they're worth more than 10 other teams as opposed to not being worth as much as the 19 other teams. But, you know, you talk about, you know, the ancillary revenues, but I think this is from, you know, we've had Mike Colligan on, who writes for Forbes Sports Money, and he said that these are pretty accurate. They're not going to be, you know, down to the dollar. I mean, it's not actuaries that are putting these together. They're estimates, you know, but it's a pretty good indication. I don't really get excited and turned on for this stuff.
I'm a little surprised that the Arizona Coyotes come in at 27th on the list, and that they'd be worth more than the Columbus Blue Jackets.
Well, one thing on the Winnipeg thing quickly, Drew, sure, before you get to that. This is their write-up of it. The Jets have sold out every game at MTS Center since moving to Winnipeg from Atlanta 2 years ago, but with no NBA tenant and a relatively low fee for its local television rights and not much in the way of concert revenue, the Jets must make the playoffs to ensure a big profit, and the team has missed the Stanley Cup tournament the past 3 seasons. No NBA tenant, we know that. Local television rights as compared to, I'm sure, Toronto and different cities, sure, that's a factor. There's no chance that they are not making a lot of money on the concerts. Yeah. I just can't see that being accurate at all.
It just doesn't. It doesn't make any sense. The big issue in the,
and now they're running the other. They're running the Burton too. So
I don't know if it's still a top five busiest venue in Canada, but at one point I remember a few years back, I think it was the 19th busiest venue, 19, in North America. So I agree with Richie. The MTS Center has all of the concerts and all that. They just celebrated their 10th anniversary. So, yeah, they obviously don't have an NBA tenant. But the reality is they're selling out every game. And they have a season ticket base of 13,000. And their valuation has over doubled since they bought the team. So, it's all good.
And I think what the key point that you said, Richard, at the beginning of the segment is, it doesn't take into it. It just looks at the Jets in a vacuum.
Don't worry about these owners.
Yeah,
that's what I take from these Forbes lists. Don't feel bad for any of these owners. They know what they're doing.
And at the end of the day, guys, the most important thing is, we had Doug Cifu on, and you know, the Florida Panthers are coming in 30th. But to me, the greatest thing that's going on in hockey right now is you have 30 stable owners. And teams, you never know what's going to happen with some of these teams. You know, you might see a team move to Seattle or Vegas. You know, there's always the possibility of that. But you have stable ownership. You don't have any of this nonsense ownership that you had in previous years.
You could also have expansion, which, after watching Buffalo and Columbus, makes me want to never watch another game again. The expansion thing we need to get onto, because some of the games that we've been seeing lately, mind-blowing.
Just wait till there's 34 teams.
That's what I'm saying. Mind-blowing. If there's players out there who are going to be on a team that they can't make the Sabres, dear God, that's scary.
Let's head to break. When we come back, Saturday Spotlight with the voice of the Winnipeg Jets, Dennis Bayak. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You've been listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.